Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. Talking about part 3, chapter 30. Levin must marry, apparently. Who could that be knocking at the door? The final line, a visitor, whoever it might be. Bit of a cliffhanger, you know? Have someone knock on the door at the end of the chapter and have us all wonder who it is. Very exciting. I Am Norwegian says, wow, Levin is comparing himself to Benjamin Franklin now. That kind of hubris is bound to backfire. The relationship between Marfa and Levin is nice, though. She's almost like a mother to him, and she knows him so well that she always seems to know what he's feeling. When Levin first arrived at his farm, she saw right through him also. Well, there you go. That is very true. I'm shipping Levin and the booby lady. I just want Levin to just settle down with a nice pair of boobies. I'm not even sure if she's a nice lady, but apparently she's got nice boobies. And I don't know. Maybe that's the best we can hope for little Levin. Swim said the mum of fishy said, fun fact about Benjamin Franklin and Tolstoy. In his younger years, Tolstoy read and tried to follow Benjamin Franklin's 13 virtues. A list of good traits to practice every day. It struck a chord with Tolstoy, who struggled with carnal desires. Oh, poor fellow. Here is the 13 virtues. Temperance. Eat not to dullness. Drink not to elevation. Okay, so don't eat until you feel... Don't get yourself a food coma, and don't drink until you're drunk. All right, fair enough. Silence. Speak not but what may benefit others or yourself. Avoid trifling conversation. Order. Let all things have their place. Let each part of your business have its time. Resolution. Resolve to perform what you ought. Perform without fail what you resolve. Frugality. Make no expense but to do good to others or yourself, i.e. waste nothing. Industry. Lose no time. Be always employed in something useful. Cut off all unnecessary actions. That's a hard one. Lose no time. Be always employed in something useful and cut off all unnecessary actions. All of them. Sincerity. Use no hurtful deceit. Think innocently and justly, and if you speak, speak accordingly. Justice. Wrong none by doing injuries or omitting the benefits that are your duty. Moderation. Avoid extremes. Forbear resenting injuries so much as you think they deserve. Cleanliness. Tolerate no uncleanliness in body, clothes, or habitation. Tranquility. I just want to point out that his virtue on cleanliness is not to tolerate uncleanliness. Right, it's not to do the cleaning. It's like, if it gets a bit unclean, you say to your slaves, or your whatever they had it back then, hey, it's a bit unclean, and I won't tolerate that. What a virtue. Tranquility. Be not disturbed at trifles or at accidents common or unavoidable. Chastity. Rarely use sex, but for health or offspring. Never to dullness, weakness, or the injury of your own or another's peace or reputation. Humility. Imitate Jesus and Socrates. Pretty good list, says I Am Norwegian. I faintly remember the introduction talking about how Tolstoy liked to make lists of rules for himself and to write down his failures and misdeeds, going so far as making him type out his escapades at brothels. Golly. Meh, says Swims at the Mama Fishy. Levin's still doing farmy things and brooding about Kitty, but Tolstoy's nature descriptions are as wondrous as ever. They are wondrous. All right, that's the discussion on chapter 30. Now we're going to read chapter 31. Whoops. That's 31. Halfway to the front door, Levin heard a familiar sound of coughing in the hall, but... Oh, God, my phone. It's doing phone things. I have a band... I'm going to put it on. Hang on, there we go. I've got a band. Our band has a group chat, And once someone says something, it just becomes like a four-way conversation. And yeah, this is, oh, come on, silence. Silence. There we go. Oh, anyway, 31, chapter 31. Halfway to the front door, Levin heard a familiar sound of coughing in the hall, but the noise of his own footsteps prevented his hearing it clearly, and he hoped he was mistaken. Then he saw the whole of his brother's long, bony, familiar figure, and it seemed that there could be no mistake, but he still hoped he was mistaken, and that this tall man, who was taking off his overcoat and coughing, was not his brother Nicholas. Levin was fond of his brother, but to be with him was always a torment. Under the sway of the thoughts that had come to him and of Agatha Mikhailovna's reminders, he was in an unsettled and confused state of mind, and the forthcoming meeting with his brother seemed particularly distressing. Instead of a cheerful, healthy stranger who he hoped would have diverted him from his mental perplexity, he had to meet his brother, who knew him through and through and would disturb his innermost thoughts and force him to make a clean breast of everything. And that was what he did not desire. Angry with himself for his bad feeling, Levin ran into the hall, and as soon as he had a near view of his brother, this feeling of disappointment vanished and was replaced with pity. Dreadful as his emaciation and his illness had previously made Nicholas, he was now still thinner and weaker. He was a mere skeleton covered with skin. He stood in the hall, jerking his long, thin neck, drawing a scarf from it, and smiling in a strangely piteous manner. When he saw this meek, submissive smile, Levin felt... Achoo! Oh, my God. that was a big one. excuse me. When he saw this meek, submissive smile, Levin felt his throat contract convulsively. "There, I have come to see you," said Nicholas in a hollow voice, without taking his eyes for an instant from his brother's face. "I have long wanted to, but did not feel well. Now I am much better." And he wiped his beard with the thin palms of his hands. "Yes, yes," answered Levin. He was still more terrified when, kissing his brother's face, his lips felt the dryness of the skin, and he saw his large, strangely brilliant eyes close at hand. Some weeks before this, Konstantin Levin had written to his brother that after the sale of the new things, which till then had remained undivided, Nicholas was entitled to his share, which came to about 2,000 rubles. Nicholas said that he had now come to fetch that money, but chiefly to visit his own nest and touch his native soil, in order, like the heroes of old, to gather strength from it for the work that lay before him. In spite of the fact that he was more round-shouldered than ever, and that being so tall his leanness was startling, his movements were quick and sudden as formerly. Levin took him to his room. Nicholas dressed carefully, a thing he never used to do, brushed his thin, straight hair, and went smiling upstairs. He was in a most affectionate and cheerful mood, such as Levin remembered his often being in it as a child, and he even mentioned Sergius Ivanich without irritation. When he met Agatha Mikhailovna, he joked with her and questioned her about the other old servants. The news of Parfen Denisich's death affected him strangely. A look of fear appeared on his face, but he immediately recovered himself. After all, he was old, he remarked, and changed the subject. "Well, I will spend a month or two with you, and then I will go to Moscow. Do you know, Miyakov has promised me a post, and I am entering the civil service. I will now arrange my life quite differently," he continued. "You know, I have got rid of that woman, Mary Nikolovna." "Why, what for?" "Oh, she was a horrid woman. She has caused me a lot of unpleasantness," but he did not say in what the unpleasantness consisted. He could not explain that he had turned Mary Nikolovna away because she made his tea too weak, and chiefly because she waited on him as on an invalid. "Besides, I want to alter my life completely. Of course, like everybody else, I have done stupid things, but property is the least consideration, and I don't regret mine. Health is the great thing, and my health, thank God, has improved." Levin listened, trying but unable to think of what to say. Nicholas probably felt the same. He began questioning his brother about his affairs, and Levin was glad to talk about himself because he could do so without any pretense. He told Nicholas of his plans and activities. Nicholas listened, but evidently was not interested. I lost my space. Oh, there. These two men were so near akin and so intimate with one another that between them the least movement or intonation expressed more than could be said in words. At present, the same thought filled both their minds and dominated all else, Nicholas's illness and approaching death. But neither of them dared speak of it, and not having expressed the one thing that occupied their thoughts, whatever they said rang false. Never before had Levin felt so glad when an evening was over and it was time to go to bed. Never had he been so unnatural and artificial, even with an outsider, or when making a formal call, as he was that day. And his consciousness of this artificiality and his repentance made him more unnatural. He wished to weep over his dear dying brother, but had to listen and keep up a conversation about how Nicholas was going to live. The house being damp, and only his bedroom heated, Levin put his brother to sleep behind a partition in that room. Nicholas went to bed, but whether he slept or not, kept tossing and coughing like a sick man, and when unable to clear his throat, muttering a complaint. Sometimes he sighed deeply and said, "Oh my God," sometimes, when the phlegm choked him, he muttered angrily, "Oh, the devil." Levin long lay awake, listening to him. His thoughts were very various, but they all led up to death. Death, the inevitable end of everything, confronted him for the first time with irresistible force, and that death, which was present in this dear brother, who, waking up, moaned, and by habit called indiscriminately on God and on the devil, was not so far away as it had hitherto seemed to be. It was within himself, too. He felt it. If not today, then tomorrow, or 30 years hence, was it not all the same? But what that inevitable death was, he not only did not know, not only had he never considered, but could not and dared not consider. "I am working. I want to do something. I had forgotten that it will all end in death." He sat on his bed in the dark, doubled his arms around his knees, and thought, scarcely breathing from the mental strain. But the more mental effort he made, the clearer he saw that it was undoubtedly so, that he had really forgotten and overlooked one little circumstance in life, that death would come and everything would end, so that it was useless to begin anything, and that there was no help for it. Yes, it was terrible, but true. "But I am still alive. What am I to do now? What am I to do?" he said despairingly. He lit a candle, but got up carefully, went to the looking-glass, and began examining his face and hair. Yes, there were grey hairs on his temples. He opened his mouth. His double teeth were beginning to decay. He bared his muscular arms. Yes, he was very strong. But Nicholas, who was breathing there with the remains of his lungs, had once had a healthy body too, and he suddenly remembered how, as children, they used to go to bed together and only waited till Theodore Bogdanich had left the room, to throw pillows at one another and to laugh and laugh so irrepressibly that even the fear of Theodore Bogdanich could not stop that overflowing bubbling consciousness of the joy of living. And now that sunken hollow chest, and I who do not know what will happen to me or why. "Ka, ka, oh the devil, what are you fidgeting for? Why don't you sleep?" his brother's voice called to him. "Oh, I don't know, just sleeplessness. And I have slept well, I don't perspire now, see, feel my shirt, it's not damp." Levin felt it, returned behind the partition and put out the candle, but was long unable to sleep. Just when the question of how to live had become a little clearer to him, a new, insoluble problem presented itself. Death. Well, he is dying. He will die before spring. How can he be helped? What can I say to him? What do I know about it? I had forgotten there was such a thing. Whew, all right, there we go. Another chapter down. Not looking good for Levin's brother there. Bit of a glum one. Have your say about this one over on the subreddit. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.